You think you're going to bed yet? No, not at all. We've got more open lines for you here on Coast to Coast AM, wherever you may be, driving, in bed, just sitting around. You're next with us on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, and we've got your calls, so let's go right back to the open line calls. We'll go to Newport in Rhode Island. Brooke is with us, east of the Rockies. Hey, Brooke, good morning.
Good morning, George. Thank you for taking my call and my sincere and condolences to you on your passing of your father.
Thank you, Brooke.
I wanted to give you an update on this mysterious light phenomena that we're seeing here in Rhode Island. And I also wanted to ask you a question.
Sure.
Although I don't know if you can answer it, regarding the UFO pathway.
Okay, we'll try that. But go ahead. What's going on out there?
Okay. On December 1st, last Thursday, there was a mysterious crash in Plymouth, Massachusetts, in Michael's Furniture Warehouse, where something crashed into the warehouse, and the FAA said that it was a pipe, but that they couldn't figure out if it had to do with any known aircraft. And oddly enough, the next day, the director of the FAA was arrested for DUI in Washington, D.C., and resigned.
I remember that. That was strange.
Yeah, that was very, very strange. Now, on this light phenomena that we're seeing here, I have a friend who looked through a telescope, and her father's telescope is strong enough to see craters on the moon. And they said that this is a triangular-shaped UFO with three lights within it. And this craft has been hovering around, especially the Providence area, and also with mysterious aircraft constantly hovering over it. And that was the update on that phenomena. The other update is there was another fall in the Providence Place Mall where somebody fell and died in the Providence Place Mall this week. And that was not very widely reported. As a matter of fact, it was pretty hushed up. But on this UFO phenomena, I spoke to a friend of mine, and he said he saw a UFO, literally a silver craft, rising from one of the rivers here on the side that we happen to see this light. And then his mother and he actually saw a UFO that landed in their backyard in Narragansett, Rhode Island.
What did it look like? Did they describe that object?
He said it was green colored, oddly enough. And that the odd correlation there is that on this pipe that they got in Plymouth, Massachusetts at Michael's, they described it as being green, that it was some sort of green pipe, and that they couldn't identify it as coming from any known aircraft.
What a bizarre story.
That was just a little update that I wanted to ask you about. And then I wanted to ask you if you knew of any kind of UFO pathway. I understand from a friend of mine that on Ancient Aliens, there was a UFO pathway from Montauk, Long Island, that goes along the coast and up into New Hampshire and Vermont and to Montreal, Canada. Do you or Tommy know anything about this, or could you give me a way we can locate this map?
There's also one in the North Carolina area as well. And these, of course, are pattern waves where UFOs are purportedly going back and forth from. In this particular one, just put UFO pathway, Ancient Aliens. You should be able to get something, Brooke, on that.
Okay, thank you very much, George. I appreciate it. You're doing an outstanding job.
Okay, next up, let's go to CJ in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where I will be in April at a major event. Hi, CJ, go ahead.
How's it going?
It's good.
An honor to be able to talk to you, George.
Thank you.
Very, very nice. Yeah, I just I wanted to see what's the significance of this. I think it's the lunar eclipse that's going to happen this morning.
Yep, absolutely. It said that the moon's going to disappear for most people.
Moon's going to disappear, yeah. And I live right here by, like, Kirtland Air Force Base, and there are, I would say, about 5 or 6 Blackhawks just going over, not on the base, but going over the actual public.
Huh. All right.
Now, so it's kind of, you know, it's kind of suspicious. Maybe waiting for something to happen, maybe alignment or something.
You never know. You never know. But, yeah, I you know, on the West Coast, you're going to see this a little bit better than people anyplace else. So take advantage of it. Go out there pretty soon. Let's go next to Medina, Ohio. It's John Stern on Coast to Coast. Hey, John, thanks for holding.
George, what a pleasure.
My pleasure. Go ahead.
Condolences to you about your father.
Thank you.
When you were mentioning that about his surgery, it struck home with me. Years ago, I injured myself on a construction site, and they proposed the same kind of surgery for a herniated disc, and they wanted to cut my throat and go in through the front.
Yep, same thing.
Scary. All I could picture was a Pez dispenser. On to my story. Something happened 18 years ago. I've kept it to myself ever since. I don't know, I think maybe I just considered it personal, but I think it saved the lives of my family.
What happened?
Wintertime, small little Cape Cod style home we lived in with a open hearth fireplace.
Okay.
Every night we build a huge fire before bedtime to keep us warm. Always double checked it to make sure it was all secure before we went to bed. Went to bed and was woken up maybe an hour later by two large hands on my shoulders, one on each shoulder. Now, I'm like, a big guy doing construction.
Like shaking you awake?
Pushed me down into the mattress twice, 1,001, 1,002. I could feel the mattress giving under me. And these two large hands, not to hurt me, but just firmly on my shoulders, pressing me down.
Holding you down. Could you see the hands or you felt the hands?
It was dark. I just felt the hands. The strange thing was, it wasn't as if someone was leaning over. There was the same exact pressure on both shoulders as if it was coming from directly above me.
Hmm.
I sat up wide awake, figuring it was the wife who did it. She was sound asleep.
It wasn't her, unless she's sleepwalking.
Immediately, the next thing I smelled smoke. I bolted out of the bedroom into the living room just in time to see a huge fiery log laying on the carpet.
Had already
rolled past the ceramic tile surround and out in the carpet.
You would have lost the house and yourself.
Three children sleeping upstairs, 7, 8, and 4 years old.
Jeez. Did you have smoke alarms?
Yes.
Yeah, they would have worked. That would have helped.
They hadn't gone off yet. But it was a hard house to get to the children being upstairs. It was just, I consider it a miracle. The craziest thing, and don't think this is corny, please.
Never will, John. Go ahead.
After I had everything secured and back in the fireplace, a song started ringing in my ears. It was an old religious song called "He Touched Me." Honest to God, I couldn't believe it. It sounds corny to say it, but it's the truth.
You had a guardian angel that woke you up that day, whoever it might be.
George, I guess we all have one.
Yes, we sure do. I mean, I've tapped into it myself. John, thanks. That's a great story. That happened to me. I've mentioned this a couple times, but back in Fitchburg, Massachusetts, my family there owned a furniture store, but they lived atop this huge apartment complex, and they owned that, and we were there, and in the wee hours, we are woken up by firefighters with their masks on. The store was burning. Right up to, of course, the smoke was coming right up into the apartment, and it would have been curtain time for us. Everyone got out, and there's a picture of me in one of the Fitchburg newspapers. I'm about 8 or 9 years old, in my pajamas, running across the street at night, escaping. It was an unbelievable story. That's not pleasant to wake up to smoke in a house, that's for sure. So everybody, get smoke alarms and detectors. You got to have those. and carbon monoxide ones too, and put them down there by the furnace. Anthony in Baltimore, Maryland. Go ahead, Anthony.
Hi, yes. How are you doing?
Good, Anthony.
Yeah, I'm sorry I called before. I had noise in the background. I just want to apologize for that.
Oh, and no, that's okay. Okay.
And I also wanted my condolences to your family. I'm sorry to hear about that.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Anthony.
Okay. I was calling basically... I'm sorry. In the mornings, early in the mornings, around 9, it's usually 9, 8 o'clock, always in the sky. Sorry, I got kind of a cough.
Anthony, I really can't understand you. And so you're 0 for 2 there. Wait next week, okay, if you would. Let's go to Paul in Beaumont, Texas, first-time caller.
Hey, George.
Hey, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. I've been listening for a couple of months now, and I just wanted to tell you how wonderful it is, the eloquence in which you take all these phone calls and all these interesting people that call in.
I do my best. I kind of wish poor old Anthony would have gotten through, but he's breaking down on me.
Yeah. Well, it happened.
Yep.
I just wanted to tell you a story that happened to me when I was younger, about 16 or 17. I'm the youngest of four, and my dad passed when I was about 7. And I was kind of a troubled youth. And one night I was driving around, and it was, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I decided to go to the cemetery where my dad was buried. And so I went there, and of course the gates were all locked, and I hopped the fence, and I knew exactly, where it was. And I went over, and we kind of had a discussion, and I just said, "Dad, just let me know, that you're around." Mm-hmm. And I was looking up at the sky, and it was almost a Spielberg moment, but this bright, wonderful shooting star just flew right through the sky.
There it was.
I kind of dried my eyes and just said, "Well, thanks." And, walked back out to my car and went home.
That's a great feeling, isn't it?
It is. And I just wanted to relay that story to you.
That's a great story. Paul, thank you. I have not tapped into that yet. I will. But I have not done that yet. Alex in Windsor, Ontario. Hey, Alex, welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Murray. My condolences on the passing of your father.
Thank you, sir.
Are you there?
Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to tell you a story which is quite intriguing. In 1972, I was 10 years old.
Okay.
I'm in Iranian by origin. We were taking a family trip from Tehran, the capital, to the military air base in Caspian Sea. I don't know how many hours drive it is, but it was interesting. We stopped on the way. It was a one-way road those days, and it was a two-way. It was just one way all the way to the Caspian Sea. And we stopped at an authentic coffee shop, not like the Western style, but I'm sure you can understand. It was just a hut with tables and chairs and to bring tea and sweets and whatnot.
Sure.
And we had our whatever we required to have, and on the way going back, it was myself, my aunt, my mom, my dad, my sister, my brother, and the Jeep was full. There was this old man who was sitting at the table over there, and he looked at my father on the way, and my father smiled at him, and we're all going, and he said, "Can you give me a ride to the Caspian Sea?" My dad said, "I apologize, but we hardly have any space in the car and in the Jeep, and we can't take you. I'm really sorry." He said, "Oh, don't worry about it. Thank you anyways." So we proceeded on the trip. We arrived at the military airbase, and before we went inside the compound, which was guarded, we decided to have something to eat so we can unpack and do whatever we have to do.
Yeah.
Long and behold, at the restaurant, the old man was sitting there.
How did he get there so soon?
That's the whole story, because no other car passed us. It was during a weekday, and on a holiday weekend in Iran is a Friday, and this was like a Tuesday or a Monday. So he was sitting there. My mom looked at him, my brother, my sister, my aunt. How did he get here? Well, never mind. We all had our food. We were tired. It was a long trip. And my father approached him, and he said, you know what? I'm sorry, but, you know, can I just buy you something to eat? I'll just order some food and, you know, the rice and the beef and whatnot. And he ordered a meal for him. And the old man, well, once he was, you know, finishing his food and all that, we were leaving to say goodbye. He held my father's arm. He said, sit down. I want to tell you something. He said, what? He said, your parents, how are your parents doing? My father, my grandfather at that point, he had liver problem, complications with his liver.
Okay.
And he said, well, everybody's okay. He said, no, give me the address. And my father said, why would you like to know the address? He said, just give me the address. He said, okay, what can he, or, you know, there's no harm that he can do to us.
Right.
So we gave him the address. This man closed his eyes and he said, I'm outside your parents' home right now. Okay. And he said, I'm ringing the door and there's a servant that's coming. Beautiful garden. I'm approaching. I'm talking to your mom right now. Okay. He says, I'm inside your father's bedroom, and I'm talking to him. I touch his forehead. Don't worry. He'll be okay. I'm going to take some fruits from your mom. She's packing some fruits for me to leave. And he opened his eyes. My father said, okay, you know what? That was a nice trip. Thank you very much. Have
yeah.
a wonderful time.
Exactly.
No cell phone those days. So
yeah.
My father goes to a payphone at the restaurant, calls. And I remember distinctively this moment because my mom was standing next to him. My sister and I was goofing around being a 10-year-old. And my mom drops. My grandmother confirmed, telling my dad, that, oh, just an old beautiful old man, too. He was here a few minutes ago, and he visited us. Okay, this is beyond comprehension. I mean, it's phenomenal because he didn't do any magic. Now, he was there before us, yet he was physically in another form as he was before my grandparents, which are back in Tehran, another 3,000-4,000 miles away.
What
at
a
the
great
same
story.
Time.
And my father asked. Go ahead.
And my father asked my grandma, when was he there? She said, just a few minutes ago. He came just a few minutes ago. I gave him some fruits. Beautiful man. Touched grandpa on the head. And, you know, and this life is a mystery. And I think we're living in their world, to be honest.
And how was your grandfather's liver problem after he touched him?
Nothing. He was normal. He passed away gently, you know, after a few years. He said, nothing to worry about right away. But he's okay. He'll be okay. I mean, he did that as a token of appreciation.
Who do you think this person was, Alex?
I think this person, I think they're entities that live among us, and they've been here before, and they're still surrounded, you know, or they're surrounding us, but they want nothing to do with us because we're, you know, just short-living mortals, a bunch of greedy mortals who are just struggling to survive and get to what we need to get. And they exist. And if you do a program on the Jukis in India, you'd be mesmerized by Sir William, I have to dig out the name, a British military general whose train would not move because he insulted, as you know, India was occupied by the British for 200 years, colonized.
Right, exactly.
His train would not move because he insulted a filthy, dirty-looking Juki sitting at the corner, and he had to bend down, apologize to that filthy Juki for that train to be able to move. I mean, these creatures, they live among us. And for us to be saying, you know, wow, aliens have been billions of years around us. And, you know, but I just wanted to share that story with you.
That is a wonderful story. Thanks for calling. Windsor, Ontario, of course. I was in Detroit last week. It's right across the river. It's a great city in Canada, indeed. We will be back in just a moment for more open line phone calls, a couple texts from Tommy as well. Don't touch your dial. I'm George Norrie, and Coast to Coast AM continues. And I don't know if you heard Ian Punnett's announcement last week, but for those of you who did not, I want to tell you what's been going on with Ian. He, for the last several years, has had tinnitus, that incredibly horrible ear-ringing sound in his head, and it's just driving him nuts. He can't take it much longer, and he's not sleeping. And Ian has decided after all these years that he's going to be leaving his Saturday post at Coast to Coast AM. And we're going to be filling that slot with John B. Wells, who's done a very capable job of helping us out. So John will be the regular Saturday host, and that should happen sometime after the first of the year. Ian will do one show a month. That'll be on a Sunday, and will be available to help me in any backup work that we might have. But he's really going to restrict his activities until he can try to get this thing taken care of. Ironically, when I first did my very first show, my very first Coast to Coast show, which was April 28th, 2001, I filled in for Ian Punnett, who was doing the regular Sunday night shift. And then eventually when Ian left, the network offered me that position to be the regular Sunday night host. And I did that for a year or so until Art decided to retire, and here I am. But in Ian's particular case, he needs to get away. And, you know, we really don't know if it's the headsets that you wear over all these years. I sometimes, even after a show, will have a little ringing in my head for a little bit, and then it goes away. So it could be a combination of that. It could be a lot of things. Nobody really knows. But in Ian's case, he's going to hold, he's going to retire the microphone on a regular basis for us. He's still got his local show in Minneapolis, and we wish him well. He's been a trooper for us, extremely reliable. He will be doing our Christmas Eve program live. George Knapp will be doing our Christmas Day show. Ian will be doing our New Year's Eve show, and I will be doing our New Year's Day Sunday show as well. But the best to Ian Punnett, and many thanks to you, Ian, for the work you've done for us over all these years. Now, I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with final open line calls, so don't go away. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Let's go right back to the open line calls. This hour is going to take off fast. This last half hour, Charles in Palm Coast, Florida. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning. Personally, offer my condolences for your dad, and
thank
you. Tell you that what I have to tell you might be a little bit inspiring. And if I can, leave you my, it's a brand new website off the air for you.
Okay.
At your leisure. Okay. I have really a groundbreaking theorization of the universe, and, you know, it's pretty involved, but I just would touch on one part of it, excuse me, to give you a teaser what it's about.
Okay, interested. Go ahead.
Okay, time. The time, of course, is a human innovation. It doesn't really exist. You know, Einstein found it was a space-time. Time, I guess, time 101 could go back to the days when the Earth revolved more quickly, and people in caves would mark days off from dawn to dawn with a piece of rock on the cave wall.
Yeah.
So
right.
Now, of course, we have the atomic clock. We found we have to adjust time as the rotation of the Earth at 1,040 miles an hour approximately slows down, and there's a reason it's slowing down. And time itself is evolving and transcending because there is no such thing as time. And what we all notice as we get older and older is time is going by more quickly. Now, it's what we perceive. A lot of people, scientists believe, you know, it's psychosomatic. But in fact, it's actually a physical event that we're perceiving. I guess the way we correct that over a great period of time is add calendar days to the month of a calendar. And, you know, this has been going on for many, many years, and the big confrontation against biblical text and the archaeologists is the Earth thousands of years old, approximately 6,000 years old, or is it actually 4.7 billion years old? Well, it's both. There is a measurement problem that humans have with their senses. Take linear measurement, for instance. Linear measurement is perceived by temperature. A temperature measurement, a linear measurement, varies with temperature. So what I'm trying to say is the first thing we need to understand is there's a lot of things working on our environment, including the escalation of velocity in the expansion process of the universe.
Okay, Charles, and what I want you to do is get us that website, and we'll check this out. We got some open line calls here, and you're almost a full show. Let's go to Norway. Lieutenant is there. That's all I know. Go ahead, sir. How are you?
How are you, George? Good to talk to you. I got important information that you guys, everybody needs to know.
All right, go ahead.
Everyone familiar with the Iranian drone that got shot down, the American...
The American drone in Iran, yeah.
The American drone that got shot down in Iran. Okay, that's exactly what I wanted to talk about. Basically, bottom line is it was not shot down. Anyone can go online and look at the newsreel of the downed aircraft in question. I'm in the Air Force. Me and a bunch of my friends got together and decided that it would be best to go ahead and tell as many people as we could before the false flags happened. But basically what's going on is it was landed there by nefarious forces within our own government in order to plant the drone there, and then we'll use one of our own drones on our own soil and blame it on the Iranians. Are you guys following me?
Well, now let's talk about this. First of all, you're right about one thing. It doesn't look like it crashed. I don't see any damage to it at all.
There is no damage to it.
Okay, but what do you think's going to happen? So now they have it. What's going to happen?
Well, basically, they more or less just flopped it in their lap, and they're hoping that they will arm it with, heaven forbid, but nuke, and they're hoping that they'll be able to fly it over one of our assets or cities or allies and use it against them, and this will perfectly spark World War III.
Huh. And you guys in the military think this is what's going to happen?
Not everybody, because not everybody cares, George. Most everybody just cares about their paycheck and, you know, beer, cigarettes, and video games. But a lot of us guys inside, we got our heads on straight, and we're oath keepers, and we took an oath to the Constitution and to the people of the United States, and we joined up to protect our land and protect our countrymen and friends and family, not lie to them and, you know, contribute to false flag terror.
All right. What we're going to do is record this moment, Lieutenant, because, you know, if anything like that happens, I want to be able to come back to this program and say, look, he told us, and we'll see what happens. Another text message in. Tom's back in the LA studios. What do you have, Tom?
I've got one here. Hey, George, I live in Los Angeles, and I was wondering what your opinion is of these Occupy LA people. I don't understand what they're doing this for.
I have mixed feelings about the Occupied campaign. On one hand, I think protest is healthy, especially when people are upset and they need to change things. I do have problems with people that camp in that, you know, you can still protest. You don't have to live there. And, you know, and leave tons of garbage around and things like that. I think you don't have to protest in every city in this country. The problems, of course, we know where they are. You know, they're in Washington, D.C., and they're with the big, big investment banks. Those are the ones you can worry about. Leave some of these other cities apart. So I've got mixed feelings.
Well, they all have the right to do it, but it's when they infringe on others, I think, that I have a little problem with it.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Okay.
I think so, too. All right. And, you know, I was around during the Vietnam War era. Protesting then was healthy but bad because they attacked the troops rather than, you know, understand the situation they were in. Nobody wanted the war during that time period, but you don't go after the troops because, you know, they're mandated to go. Let's go to Richard in Redding, California. Hey, Richard, thanks for the call.
Yeah, hi. Hey, yeah, I used to talk to you a couple of years back about the being microwaved and what Nick Baggage was called in the law.
Oh, yeah,
he was
there, absolutely.
On the show, and then Duncan.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I still get it. I'm burnt every night and burnt enough to where my legs look, they turn out like chalk, and the nerves in my feet and that are... destroyed. It's hard to even shower barefooted. I have to keep shoes on.
Who's bombarding you, Richard?
Pardon?
Who's bombarding you?
I don't know. You know, there was this the group that has the mind control. You know, I got started involved with them, but I seem like I'm even hurt more than they are. I had two doctors that tried to help me, and they started having it happen, and I have clicks and snaps inside my home, like micro switches being turned on and off or little switches turned on and off. I have them all recorded, and every bit of this I'm telling you, I have proper recordings or proof or an affidavit or something from someone. And But who's ever got a hold of me or whatever the heck's got a hold of me can, every time I step out of the house, my feet turn on really super hot. So to me, I'm being watched in any store I go into.
What are they after you for, Richard?
Try to figure that one out. I'm just like anyone else. I can't answer that. You know, I get that question answered all the time.
Have you been to hospitals?
We were going to come out here and bring their cameras and that. And they wrote me a letter, said, we want nothing no more to do with you, that the entity that's got a hold of you is the strongest entity we've ever seen.
Jeez.
Our two offices start getting hot inside there.
Just by being next to you. You got to be careful you don't spontaneously combust and just blow up.
Well, I'm worried about it. Believe me. A doctor tried to help me. He's 50 miles away. And they started doing it in his home. He pulled me out of class and said, Richard, you know, they're at my house now. I said, who's at your house? He says, there's noises. He had the termite people come in, the electrical people come in. He got a good bill of health there. And so he knew what it was. And he pulled me out of class. He says, what do we do? I said, I don't know. I can't get him out of my house. And so we stopped talking about it for probably a month or so, and it disappeared from him. He didn't have no more troubles, but he wrote me an affidavit then, and he's been in the medical profession.
Richard, can you get us some pictures of your body?
Oh, yeah.
That we can post on the website? Just email them to me at george@coasttocoastam.com. I'll get them up to Lex, and my gosh, something's happening to you. Time for one or two more. Mitchell in Fresno, California. Go ahead, Mitchell.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and you're a real champion, man. I couldn't handle people, I mean, just bringing up my dad all the time after he passed. And he passed recently, too, actually. He had a heart attack right in front of me. So, I mean, I don't know how you do it, but you know, my condolences
easy.
Just as well.
You too. You too. All right.
Can you hear me, George?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay,
is that it?
No,
or that's something? Okay. All right, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I want to tell you a little bit about what's in store for this week. So let's go through some of the schedule here. Colin Andrews joins us on our Monday program. Yippee. Let me go back, though. Saturday, we've got Ian Punnett, and Sunday, John B. Wells. On Sunday, Mr. Wells will be talking to Michael Horn. He's a representative, by the way, of contactee Billy Meyer. And on Saturday, Ian Punnett will be with us as he talks about, of course, science of the brain. But on Monday, Colin Andrews joins us. Colin will be talking about his work on crop investigations, crop circles. On Tuesday, finally, get a chance to talk to a representative of the Vatican Observatory about things that are going on in space, and that should be fascinating. David Schrader joins us with his new book, The Other Side, A Teen's Guide to Ghost Hunting and the Paranormal. David, of course, heads up Darkness Radio and does one heck of a job. And Thursday, working on a couple specials of a split show for you there. And we'll tell you about that more as we get into the rest of the week. Now, those of you who need to email me, like John up there in Reading, you need to send me a picture. That's george@coasttocoastam.com. Just simply fire that away if you would. And again, we look at all of them and respond to as many as we can. Up next for you, our buddy, UFO Phil.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden. And I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began the clues. Now you know the signs, cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light.
From Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Tim Banal, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.